Well, first of all, I wanted to just say thank you very much to the Lorimer family for inviting me to speak here today. It's a great honor. I don't think that there's any friendship that is that well known all over the world than the one of me and Jim. And I mean, it's amazing when I think about where it all began. In 1970, I was working out at Gold's Gym. And all of a sudden, the owner, Joe Gold, comes up to me and says, there's a guy by the name of Jim Lorimer on the phone. He's with the AAU. So I had no idea. So I go to the phone and they said, yeah, can I help you? And he said, what is this, Jim Lorimer? And I'm organizing and promoting the World Championships in weightlifting for an entire week from the 11th to the 20th of September. Now that phone call came in, it was July. He says, now I want to invite you to compete in the Mr. World competition on the 20th. So I said, well, I would love to win the title Mr. World. I think I can do it, but the 20th makes it impossible because on the 19th, I'm competing in London at the Mr. Universe contest, trying to win the title for the fifth time. And he says, well, let me think about that. Let's talk tomorrow. So again, the next day he called again, and he said to me, it's taken care of. I said, Jim, I said, how can you take care of that? Just think about it logically here for a second. I said, we are over in London, different time zone. I'm competing there at night. The show goes to 11 o'clock at night. Then we go to sleep. Then you wake up in the morning, then I'm flying to New York, back to Los Angeles. If we arrive in New York on Sunday at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and you say that your competition starts at 5. So how does that make sense? He says, well, I organized a private plane. Just like you heard just before that there was a private plane available for the women competitors. I think it was owned by Volkswagen, if I'm not mistaken. He got a private plane. So again, of course, I did not know Jim Lorimer. I've never heard of him. So I didn't have much faith in the whole thing. But I said to myself, what are we to lose? We have to fly anyway from London to New York and then to Los Angeles. So let's just take that flight. And I said to Jim, I said, by the way, I have a whole bunch of competitors with me. I said, because I'm traveling with Dave Draper, with Frank Zane, with Franco Colombo, and with all of those guys, Boyer Coe, all of those guys I took over to London to the Mr. Universe contest, that I'm going to take to London to the Mr. Universe contest, so they all will be with me. He says, well, that's great. They all will be able to fit in the plane. So I told the boys about this idea. No one had any faith. So we arrived after competing at the Mr. Universe contest in London. We arrived in New York. And sure enough, there was a person there greeting us and taking us from the terminal to the private terminal over to this airplane. We got on the plane, we took off, and we landed in Columbus at 4:45. And there was Jim Lorimer. That's where I met him for the first time. Says, well, hello. He says, you see, it all worked out. I said, well, in 15 minutes the competition starts. He says, don't worry about it. I run the competition. So we quickly rushed to the Veterans Memorial Auditorium, ripped off our clothes as quickly as possible. There wasn't even time to pump up, which bodybuilders usually do before you go out on stage. And there wasn't really much time to oil up or anything like that. It was like rush, 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 rush. And we rushed out there, and we were competing. It was 2 hours. posing, of course, doing the posing, we pumped up and everything like this. Then we went back again, and then they called out through two more athletes to pose off and all of this stuff. And then quickly in between, we oiled up a little bit. And it was the most spectacular competition. The place was packed. The Veterans Memorial was absolutely packed. The crowds were going crazy, standing ovation. And then to tip it all off, and to top it off, I won. So I won now the Mr. World competition. Not only did that excite me, but also this was the first time that I had a chance to beat Sergio Oliva, which was the top competitor at that time. He beat me the year before in a Mr. Olympia. And so to me, this became like the prime bodybuilding competition that I ever competed in. But not only because I won, but also it was so well organized. Think about it. That Jim Lorimer got a private plane to bring the six bodybuilders that came from London all the way to this competition so they could compete. And it was, everyone agreed that it was without any doubt the best organized competition. And we were the best treated, we had the best trophies. Everyone got exactly what they were promised, which was not common in bodybuilding in those days. So I was so impressed and I was so excited about this that I went to Jim Lorimer after the competition when he took us back to the airplane or to the airport. And I said to him, I said, Jim, this was so well organized. We were so well treated. I said, you and I, we have to go and become partners. When I retire from bodybuilding competition, which will be many years from now, I don't know when, but I want you and I to organize the Mr. Olympia competition. And he says, well, I'm ready. Let me know when. And then we talked about it every so often and called each other. And then in 1975, when I competed in the Mr. Olympia competition in South Africa, right after that, I asked the IFBB, the International Federation of Bodybuilding, if they could grant me the Mr. Olympia competition, that I will retire. Can I organize this competition in Columbus, Ohio? And I, of course, was all prepped because Jim Lorimer now has taught me how to do that. He says, you got to show a letter from the mayor, and you got to show a letter from the police chief. You got to show a letter from the fire marshal. You got to show a letter from the hotels that we are organized and we are ready for this competition, that we have the money and all of this stuff. And so I used all of those letters, and we got the Mr. Olympia competition. And in 1976, we organized the first Mr. Olympia competition in Columbus, Ohio. It was a packed auditorium, again at the Veterans Memorial Auditorium, where I won. And for the first time, we had the biggest cash prizes. We had the most people there. We had people displaying there. It was the most successful Mr. Olympia competition that they ever had in the history of bodybuilding. So I said to Jim, I said, Jim, we got to continue on with that. And he says, well, if the IFBB wants us to do that, I'm fine with that. So sure enough, the IFBB came to us and says, you guys did such an outstanding job that we want you to go and organize the Mr. Universe and the Mr. Olympia competition. So now we were organizing more than we ever did. And again, we were very successful in 1977, in 1978, 1979, and it went on like that. But we had no idea, as much as now as I knew Jim Lorimer, what a man of strength, inner strength he is, and how well organized he is, and how he kept his promises, and how determined he was, and how competitive he was, that we have to always have the best. I had no idea that one day this would end up as the Arnold Classic Sports and Fitness Festival, the biggest sports and fitness festival in the world, with 88 countries competing, over 80 sports competing, 22,000 athletes. As Jim always proudly said, remember, Arnold, the Olympics only have 12,000, we have 22,000. So it's just, imagine the size of all of this. None of this would have ever happened without Jim Lorimer. This man is like unlike anything that I've ever seen in my life. The drive that he has, the organizational ability he has, and the kind of things that you learn right along the way. So I got to know this Jim Lorimer, this tough guy, this really strong guy, organized and loves people and gets in there and gets his hands dirty, works 24 hours a day and all of that stuff. But there's so many things I didn't know about him, which was really interesting because you get to know him slowly because he doesn't brag. He would never say, I was with the FBI. So I come out here one time and I visit him and we start promoting for the next Mr. Olympia competition. He says, let's go target shooting. I said, target shooting? I said, do you shoot? He said, yeah. So he takes me to some place here near Columbus and he hits one bullseye after the next with his little .38 pistol. So I said, that's odd. Sometimes from the hip shooting, sometimes straight shooting, sometimes with two arms shooting, all the different variations. And I said to myself, wait a minute, what's going on here? He says, why are you so good? And he says, well, Arnold, you know, I was with the FBI for years, and we did a lot of practicing. So that's when I found out. I said, you were with the FBI? I didn't know that. The next time I arrive, he says, where do we go? And I said, he says, we go right out to Worthington. I said, what do we do in Worthington? He says, well, I'm mayor of Worthington. I said, you're mayor of Worthington? He says, yeah, mayor of Worthington. I said, so what are we going to do? And he says, well, the mayor always holds court. So I have to decide there's traffic violations and all kinds of violations. He says, the mayor is the one that's the judge. At the same time, I said, you're a judge? You're a mayor and a judge? I didn't know that. Yeah, but he says, you know, there's things that you do. The next time I come out here, he says, Arnold, can you do me a favor? He says, we have an extra few hours. He says, can you come over where I teach law at the law school? I say, what, you're a law professor? He says, well, I'm doing just teaching those kids. And so it's like every single time I arrived there, there was some other kind of a surprise. I mean, this guy is extraordinary, the different sides that he has. So I didn't know any of that, nor did I know that, to be honest with you, that one day I would become that close of a friend of his. And that was really spectacular. I did not know that he's going to end up just about on every movie set that I was working on. I mean, he visited every movie. And he had the greatest time hanging out with me in the motorhome, getting ready for my scenes and all that stuff. I did not know that he's going to go and talk me into marriage in his jacuzzi. He loved this jacuzzi. All of a sudden, he was into jacuzzis. I said, Jim, I said, what is that? So I'm staying out at the house in Worthington, beautiful little house, and there's a jacuzzi there. And we're sitting there in the jacuzzi, and all of a sudden says, well, I want to talk to you about, you know, it's time for you to get married. So I said, what makes you think that? He says, well, he says, you know, let me tell you something. And he told me about his relationship with Jean and how they met and how they got married and what a happy man he is and all of that stuff. And he literally talked me into it. I said, okay, Jim, I promise you this will be taken care of. So I was right there in the jacuzzi. I had no idea that Jim ever would be, you know, one of the groomsmen in my wedding. I did not know that he's going to eventually write speeches for me. I had no idea that he's going to write jokes for me. Do you know, I don't know if anyone knows that, but Jim had this very thick joke book. Bob, you guys know that. They had a book with all the jokes, hundreds of jokes in there for every subject. I mean, if it is a funeral, if it is a wedding, if it is a birthday, if it is some kind of a celebration of anything, he had those jokes in there in this book. And so I called him one day, I said to Jim, I said, you know, you're the one that got me into this whole thing with the marriage. I said, now I'm going to Hannesport and I'm getting married. I said, I need something for my speech, that's something funny. He says, well, let me call you back. He called me back and he says, I have a good one. I said, what? You go up there and you say, you know, marriage is about three rings. I said, three rings? Well, listen to me, he says, Arnold, listen and learn. Remember, God gave you two ears and only one mouth. So listen. Listen is more important here. He says, there's three rings. The first is the engagement ring. then there's the wedding ring, and then there's the suffering. So I said, Jim, are you really want me to say that in front of the Kennedys when I marry Maria? I said, this is what I'm kind of up against. He said, those are the three rings. And he says, well, this is a joke. He says, this is a joke. So this is the kind of things that he was providing all of these services for me. I didn't expect any of that. Nor did I expect that one day he would call me and he would say, Arnold, you're going to do the introduction to Vice President George Bush. I said, what do you mean I do the introduction? He says, at Nationwide Plaza, right in front of it, I've organized a political rally with 10,000 people. And you will be introducing the vice president. I know your political point of view. He says, you're conservative. You're like me. So I'm going to organize that. I said, well, but what am I going to say? And he says to me, well, I will have a speechwriter work on it. Peggy Noonan. You guys probably, I don't know if you know Peggy Noonan, but Peggy Noonan was the number one speechwriter at that time, period. She wrote for Bush, she wrote for Reagan, she wrote for everybody. So he got her to write for me the introductory speech for George Bush. And that led then me campaigning with George Bush, going from city to city, and eventually him offering me to be the chairman of the President's Council on Physical Fitness and Sports. So that's another one of those things that I did not know, that Jim Lorimer is going to be the one that is going to be my right-hand guy on this President's Council on Physical Fitness and Sports. I had no idea that one day we would be standing or sitting in the White House, in the Oval Office, and talking to President Bush about equality and about children and health and fitness, and about traveling through all 50 states to promote health and fitness. Jim Lorimer organized all that. So this is the great thing about Jim Lorimer, is that there's so many things that he did and that he got me involved with. It was unbelievable, and I found out, and you've heard this today already earlier, he was not into money. Money was not important. He lived in a very kind of a modest house. He had a regular car always that he buys until he bangs it up because he was not a good driver. I've witnessed that myself, the way he banged into things all the time. But the bottom line was that he was so giving. The story that you heard before about the girls, the track and field women in Ohio. I mean, this is a typical story of Jim Lorimer, that he would help. And there is nothing in there, there's no money for him in there, this is not a career move or anything like that. He was into it because he wanted to reach out and help. Because to him it was always about, you know, we have to leave this world a better place than we inherited it. That's what he was all about. He always talked about do something for other people. I mean, he was the first one to help me with Special Olympics. When I told him the idea that I brought to Special Olympics weight training and powerlifting, he said, well, let's organize it. And he helped me in Washington to organize this big international powerlifting championships for Special Olympians. And it became the biggest hit since then, the most attended event. But he was there organizing it. So that was Jim Lorimer. When I started the after-school programs nationwide, he was the first one to say to me, he says, well, let's create some synergy and bring the after-school programs to Ohio and get the governor to put money into this. And that's what we did. Since that day, we had every year, the night before the Arnold Classic, we had a fundraiser where we raised millions of dollars for after-school program. And then the governor promised to match that. So that's the kind of work he did endlessly, over and over again, no matter what it is. He was participating and he was full of energy and doing. So those are the kind of things that I feel like so enriched to have a man like that that has done that much work. And now I believe kind of like he lives the best of both worlds. Because he's up there and he's reunited with his love, with his soulmate, with his sweetheart, Jean. And you can count on it that he has the whistle around him and he's blowing the whistle and whipping all those angels in shape. That I can guarantee you. He's kicking some serious butt up there. And he's also uniting with all of his bodybuilding buddies. If it is Reg Park, Steve Reeves, Bill Pearl, Dave Draper, Franco Colombo, Joe Weider, Ben Weider, Joe Gord, and the list goes on and on and on. I can see him ready, uniting with them up there and starting to pump up again and train. And so down here, of course, I have to say, he will never be gone. I mean, he will never be gone because he's all part of us. Every one of us that sits here, he's part of us. And I know that the family, which is an extraordinary family, will make sure to continue on his traditions and all of this work that he always did, because he taught that to all of us, that we have to continue on. So thank you very much for listening. I will miss Jim, but he will be in me forever. Thank you very much.